When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Slash Film Daily for Thursday, July 8th, 2021. On today's episode of the show, we're going to be talking about the latest film and TV news and also opening up the mailbag and answering some listener questions. My name is Ben Pearson. I am a senior writer at slashfilm.com, and I am joined on today's episode by senior writer and chief film critic, Chris Evangelista.
Hello. I'm sorry that my title is so wordy now. I feel bad that you have
No, it's great. I love it. I love it. Okay, so there's only two news items that I wanted to talk to you about today, Chris. And the first of which is a sequel has been announced for a new movie. Why don't you tell me about that one?
Yes, it's The Tomorrow War, a film that came out on Amazon Prime Video over the holiday weekend. And it did very well, according to several different sources. It's always hard to track streaming things because Amazon won't release official numbers, and neither will, you know, Netflix. Pretty much no streaming service wants to release their official numbers. But
yeah, I saw Chris Pratt, I think it was on Instagram, maybe it was on Twitter, say that it was like the number one movie in America. And I'm like, by what metric? Like, yes. how is that even possible that you can say that? But anyway, go on.
Whatever you say, Chris Pratt. But yeah, so apparently this was a big hit, which means they're already talking about a sequel, which, you know, on one level, it seems like a no-brainer because, like I just said, it was a hit. On another level, it's kind of odd because that movie, have you seen the movie, Ben? Did you watch it?
I have not, and I can't decide if I want to because I've heard so many mixed things. I've heard a lot of people say that, you know, listen, this is not a great movie, but it's still a lot of fun. Did you see it? Where do you fall
on that? I did. I watched it. I did not think it was that fun. Sam Richardson is in it. He's on, you know, I Think You Should Leave and a bunch of other comedy things, and he's great. He like steals the movie, but he's not in it enough to make the movie worthwhile. Like the majority of the movie is Chris Pratt running around, and I really wish Chris Pratt would stop doing this action hero thing. Like, look, I think Chris Pratt can be a funny, charming guy when he's playing, you know, like a goofball like he did on Parks and Rec. But the minute he got, you know, jacked and started playing, you know, cool guys, it just doesn't work. And I feel like I'm going off on a rant here, but I feel like they took like the wrong message from Guardians of the Galaxy. Because yes, he got ripped for that movie, but he's still like a goofball in that movie. He's still kind of an idiot, and no one has seemed to be able to realize that like that's the secret to making a Chris Pratt character work. He has to be kind of an idiot, and in this movie he plays like a scientist, so it's like I'm not buying Chris Pratt the scientist.
Yeah, so I think part of the reason the Guardians thing works so well is because that character thinks he is really cool, but he's actually kind of not.
Right, exactly.
And, yeah,
that's a great encapsulation, because like you watch like him in Jurassic World and he stinks in that because he's playing like a generic cool guy, and then he rides a motorcycle, he's got a leather vest, and he's just so bland in that. And this is sort of like the same thing. So that's a long way of me saying I didn't really like the movie that much, but the point I was getting at is the movie, without giving away spoilers, it has a very definitive ending, so I have no idea how they're going to make a sequel to this, but that hasn't stopped, you know, other movies before from going ahead with it.
Okay. Yeah. If you guys out there listening to this episode have thoughts about a sequel, or maybe like, you know, some fake pitches for us for where you'd like to see this thing go, I would love to hear them. And maybe if you want to try to convince me to actually watch the movie, if you're a big enough fan of the first movie that you think it has enough merit, I would love to hear and read your explanations there too. If you want to shoot us an email, that would be awesome. All right. So then the only other news item is a new musical adaptation. I guess this is technically a remake, is also in the works. Chris, tell me about that one.
The remake is Guys and Dolls, which it originated as a Broadway musical in 1950, and then it was turned into a film in 1955 starring Marlon Brando and Frank Sinatra. And there has been talk of a potential remake of this for a long time. A few years ago, I think it was Warner Brothers owned the rights. I should look at the story because it's right in front of me. Let's see. So yeah, sorry, it was 20th Century Fox. Good thing I looked this up so I wasn't a complete fool. So 20th Century Fox had the rights and they wanted Channing Tatum and Joseph Gordon-Levitt to star in the remake. But then the Disney-Fox merger came around. That sort of put the movie on hold. And as a result, 20th Century Fox lost the rights to this film. And when they lost it, TriStar Pictures swooped in and bought the rights. And now they have it. And now they're making the remake. And they've brought in Bill Condon, who directed Dreamgirls and the live-action Beauty and the Beast, to direct this film.
So have you seen the original movie with Sinatra and all those guys?
Yeah, okay. I saw it when I was younger.
I think I saw it also like in a high school drama class or something, maybe like the first half of it, and I never finished it. But then I finally got around to watching it, I don't know, maybe a couple years ago or something now. And I really enjoyed it for the most part. I think there's a romance in this movie that is, to call it a whirlwind romance is like doing a disservice to the word whirlwind. It's like, it's so wild how little time passes and how deeply these two characters just completely fall head over heels for each other. And I won't say which characters in case anybody is interested in, you know, visiting the older story.
Frank Sinatra and Marlon Brando. They fall in love with each other.
It's a very, very subversive 1950 movie. Yes. Yes. So what do you think about the idea of a modern version of this story, Chris? Because I feel like it worked, you know, this movie came out in the 50s and it's like a throwback movie. It was a throwback even then. So yeah, now it's like a super throwback.
Right. Because I believe it's set in the 20s, even though
I think so.
And it's considerably not very woke. Like the romance you're talking about originates like based on a bet. And I feel like you can't get away with that now, but I'm guessing they'll have to make it a period piece. Like, I can't imagine like modern day guys and dolls. Like, I mean, I'm sure someone has thought of that and I'm sure it would be awful, but if they are going to do this, I hope they keep it, you know, set in the 20s. Cause I mean, like Prohibition is like part of the plot. Like you can't really do that. So they kind of have to do that. So, but I don't know. I mean, Bill Condon, I kind of like his non-musicals more than his musicals. Like he directed Gods and Monsters. He directed Candyman 2, which I really like.
Wow.
So,
okay.
Yeah. So I kind of prefer his non-musicals. So I don't really know how excited I can get about him doing a new musical, but I guess it's going to depend on, you know, who they cast in this film. I kind of hope they go after Channing Tatum again, just because it seems insane that he has yet to be in a musical. You know, he's charming, he can dance. Like, why has no one put that guy in a musical yet? It seems like a no-brainer. So
it makes no sense at all, especially after Hail Caesar, where he had that really brief song and dance number, and he was so good in that. But all right, so let's get into the mailbag, Chris. We have a big backlog of stuff. You guys have been great about sending in a ton of feedback and questions and all sorts of stuff. So let's get into some of these here. Matt from Wisconsin writes, "Hey guys, on a recent episode, you mentioned how great of a movie Iron Man 3 is, despite the hate it gets from so many hardcore Marvel fans. Are there any other movies you guys can think of that get a lot of love from film fans for just being a good movie, but are despised by its fanboys for breaking the mold? The only other one I can think of is Star Wars The Last Jedi." So that's the essence of the question there, Chris. Can you think of anything else that sort of fits this these criteria?
I mean, yeah, Star Wars The Last Jedi is probably like the prime example. It's tough because so much of these opinions are, I feel like all of us, including me, don't realize how little Twitter represents the real world.
Yeah, I have to remind myself of it every single day.
Like, I know it seems like everyone is on Twitter, but the majority of the world's population is not on Twitter. And I feel like a lot of us get like wrapped up in this thing where we're just like, oh, I saw it on Twitter. Everyone must be thinking this. And, you know, that's how you get people being like, ah, Trump has boat parades, he's gonna win. It's like, no, you idiots. Like, get like the point is that it's a very online thing, and it's hard to balance that, because, you know, if you jump off of what people say online, you would assume that like everyone just hates The Last Jedi, but that movie was a huge hit. It has like a huge Rotten Tomatoes rating. You know, normal people, you know, people who aren't lunatics like us don't like care about that stuff. They're just like, it was a movie and that was it. So
yeah,
that's a long way of saying that, like, yeah, I mean, Last Jedi is a good example. I don't know, I remember for a long time people didn't like Gremlins 2 because it's so goofy and it's such a send up of the first movie. But I also feel like time has healed that wound and everyone kind of likes Gremlins 2 now. So it, I feel like after a while, these things sort of like come around and flip. But I honestly feel like The Last Jedi is the biggest example. And I feel like the inverse of that would be like Jurassic World 2, which also flips the formula, but which I think is just awful from start to finish.
Yeah, I don't think that one was particularly loved by critics. But the only other thing that I could think of that sort of fits into this category is On Her Majesty's Secret Service, the James Bond movie. That one, I just looked it up, and it has an 81% on Rotten Tomatoes from critics and a 64% from general audiences. And, obviously Rotten Tomatoes is not the end-all be-all of all this stuff, but it's just a guideline or a good serviceable guideline for questions like this, frankly. That's really the only thing I use Rotten Tomatoes for, just to get a very general sense of what's going on. That Bond movie, I think, is a little different than like what general audiences expect from a Bond film. And I think that difference, that differentiality, whatever the word is what sort of draws critics to it. So that one works pretty well there, I think. All right. Our next one is from Chad from Australia. And he wants to know if there were any films that we had to be dragged to, but then ended up really enjoying. And he lays out an example where there was a period in the 90s where he was not really watching a ton of big budget Hollywood stuff. And somebody asked him to go watch Peter Jackson's The Frighteners. And even though he was definitely not in that mode of watching those movies at that time, he ended up succumbing to the peer pressure and then was surprised by how much he enjoyed that movie. So anything that you can think of, Chris, that you were forced to go to and then ended up really liking?
I don't know if I would say, I don't think anyone's ever like forced me to go to a movie because I'm a strong, independent man, damn it. No one, but I know there have been examples of this, but like none of them are like springing to mind right now. But I also feel like when this happened, it happened when I was younger, because I've reached a point now where I don't want to say like I'm open to everything, but I feel like I've reached a point where I've learned enough from watching so many movies that I need to give almost everything a chance. Like I don't give a shit when a new Transformers movie comes out or something like that. But I feel like a lot of people these days are, and again, this is just an online thing, so it's probably not the real world, but people will be like, they call things like, oh, that's so cringe. And they'll be just talking about how like a movie that shows like the smallest hint of emotion is like, it's like, ah, I can't get down with this. And it's like, just, it's like, that's such like a, like, that's how I acted in high school, where I was like, I'm too fucking cool for this. All right, here's an example sort of that fits into this. So it's sort of an example, but not really. So I'm sorry for cheating here. But so, so when Donnie Darko came out, that movie, I don't know if what your thoughts are on that movie, Ben, but when that movie came out, it was a big deal for, people like me, people who liked like weird, I'm using underground in quotes because there are movies that are far more underground than this, but you know, that movie, it didn't get like a real theatrical release. It did. It was a box office bomb, but it had a cult following from a home video. And, you know, I discovered it on home video. I'm pretty sure it was on VHS at the time. That's how long ago this was. And I was just like, holy shit, this is like the coolest movie ever. And as I got a little older, I sort of got to this period where I was like, I'm above Donnie Darko. I'm too cool for it. Like, that's like Hot Topic cinema. I don't give a shit about that. I'm too cool. I'm too adult. That's a movie for teenagers. And thankfully, as I got even older, I was like, what a stupid mentality. And I actually just recently rewatched it because I don't know if you recall this, Ben, but a few months ago, there was a real concern that a Chinese satellite was going to crash into Earth and kill people.
Yes.
And I was like, that's kind of like Donnie Darko. So my wife and I were like, let's rewatch Donnie Darko in honor of this Chinese satellite.
Let's lean into the potential tragedy that's coming.
Right. And watching it, I was like, God damn, this movie is really frigging good. Like, it's not perfect. It has its problems, but it's such an inventive movie. And the fact that, you know, Richard Kelly just went for it and he swung for the fences and he tried something different. Like, give me a million more movies like that than half the shit we're getting today. So like, that's not really an answer to the question, but that's like the best example I can think of where I entered a period where I was like, ugh, I'm above that movie. And then I thankfully grew out of that. And that's what I want other people to do too. you know, get over your hangups, people. Like, just, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, I have a similar quick story. I was watching While You Were Sleeping the other day for the first time all the way through. I don't know if you've seen that movie, the romantic comedy. Okay. So there's one of the supporting characters played the mother character, Winifred, in Mary Poppins, but she's obviously much older in While You Were Sleeping, because that movie came out in, like, what, the early 90s or something. Yeah. And my mom is a big Mary Poppins fan, so I texted her, and I was like, hey, this movie that I know you like, While You Were Sleeping, did you realize that this woman was the actress from Mary Poppins? And she's like, oh, yeah. And then she made some comment about, like, oh, wow, I can't believe you're watching While You Were Sleeping. Like, that's, you know, out of character for you or something like that. And that's kind of what you're talking about there, where, like, you know, when I was in high school or something, I would not be caught dead watching, you know, a quote unquote chick flick or a romantic comedy. But now, you know, over the past, I don't know, 10, 15 years or something, I've just, like, basically, I'm just like, give me anything. Like, you know, if it's a movie, I will watch it, essentially. Yeah. So yeah, hopefully people.
I had the same experience pretty much with that movie, because around the holidays last year, they added While You Were Sleeping to Disney Plus, because it technically takes place during Christmas and New Year's.
Yeah, I had no idea. I was like actually kind of mad that I just watched it in a random day in July. I was like, man, I should have saved this for Christmas. I didn't even know it was a Christmas movie.
And I had never seen it, pretty much for that same reason. Like, when it came out, I was probably younger than a teenager, and I was like, that's a girl's movie. Mm-hmm. And around the holidays, my wife and I had watched Speed, because my wife had never seen Speed. And after it was over, she was like, man, I want to watch another Sandra Bullock movie. And she was like, oh, While You Were Sleeping, have you ever seen that? And I was like, no, I have not. So let's watch it. And I watched it, and I was like, this is a fucking charming movie. If only I had, like, and I don't know, maybe if I had seen it as a younger person, I would be like, that sucked. But watching it now, I was like, I've been missing out all these years on While You Were Sleeping.
Yeah. So to answer, or to try to answer Chad's question, a movie that I was, well, this actually isn't even answering the question. So Chad's question specifically is, what films were you dragged to, but then really enjoyed? I can't think of an example, but I can think of a time where I dragged people to see a movie. When I was in high school, a bunch of my friends and I would just go to the movies and, like, figure out what we were going to watch when we got there, which now I feel like is psychopathic behavior, because I would never do that. But, you know, we were kids, and that was all we had to do basically in our town. And I convinced everybody, all my pack of guy friends, to watch The Princess Diaries, because there was a girl that I thought was cute in my high school who happened to show up and say that that was the movie that she was going to see. So everyone was pretty furious with me, but I actually ended up enjoying that movie. So that's another charming little romantic comedy there. So okay, let's move on to the next one. And this is from Braden from Fort Worth, Texas. He says, he's talking about the Dwayne The Rock Johnson movie, Red One, that was announced recently, where it's like Santa, Hobbs meets Santa Claus or whatever. And he says, we know Chris Morgan is on board for the script, but Dwayne Johnson recently teased a big directing announcement soon. With Johnson's track record, that directing announcement will likely be lackluster, as he likes to work with quote unquote fine directors like Ross and Marshall Thurber, Brad Peyton, David Leitch. In my wildest of dreams, Christmas action guru Shane Black would take the reins and return to his red and white roots, but that probably won't happen. The question is there an actor that you generally like that always picks bad/fine directors to work with? Do you have any in this category?
I mean, The Rock is definitely at the top of the list, because I feel like, I think I mentioned this before, I feel like if he would just work with someone who challenges him, he can probably deliver a really good performance, but he just wants to play The Rock in movies. Man, what about you, Ben? Do you have
There is one that jumped out in a huge way to me, and that is Melissa McCarthy with Ben Falcone, her husband.
Oh my God, yes, please.
He just, like, makes really, really bad movies, and she has so much potential as an actor. Like, almost every comedy that she's in that her husband does not direct, I just find her to be super charming and really funny, and it's like a completely different type of experience watching her in one of those movies that she collaborates with him on. So
They need to be stopped. I'm sure their relationship is great, and that's great, but please, just, she, like, when you watch her in other people's movies, like if you watch her in Can You Ever Forgive Me, you're like, oh my God, what a great actress. Why is she constantly working with her husband? And I feel like another example would be Adam Sandler. He's like always working basically with his buddies, and then every now and then he'll make something with the Safdie brothers or Paul Thomas Anderson, and you'll be like, where has this Adam Sandler been all this time? But at the same time, he's wildly successful, and he likes to use his movies as paid vacation. So I can't really I can't knock him because he's found a nice little niche there. But I do wish. I wish he would work with better filmmakers more often instead of like once every like 15 years.
Yeah. The only other one I can think of is maybe Denzel Washington and Antoine Fuqua, who is like, I would say just a fine director. You know, they collaborate pretty frequently. You know, The Magnificent Seven, their big remake that they did a few years ago, I just thought was like, okay. And like The Equalizer movies, you know, it's fine, whatever. I just wish that Denzel was like, you know, he's getting up there in age. I would love to see him. You know, he only has so many more movies in him right now. Hopefully it's, you know, 20 still. But even that is like a limited pool. And I just want, you know, the most from every one of those performances I can get. But
yeah, well, we got Macbeth coming soon. That'll be fun.
Yeah, yeah. I'm excited about that.
Anton Fuqua's Macbeth.
Oh, my God. That actually, I might be curious to see. All right. So we've had a couple requests via email for the return of Chris's Advice Corner, which longtime listeners might remember was a segment that we used to do. And I dug up the old theme song from, I think it's called Love Wally, is the band that created this. So I'm going to play the theme song. Here we go.
It's Chris's Advice Corner.
All right, so in Chris's Advice Corner, this email comes from Nicholas E., who is formerly from Chicago Heights, Illinois, and is currently in Chandler, Arizona. He says, "Hey, everyone, this morning I just left Illinois to start a new life with a new job opportunity in Arizona. It'll be my first time in 27 years that I'll be away from my family and friends. It's terrifying, sad, and overall makes me worry that I might be making a mistake. I was just wondering if anybody has any advice for getting through all of these overwhelming feelings. Any tips for making new friends as well would be awesome, too. Thank you all so much." So, Chris, any suggestions or life advice for Nicholas E?
I know this is my advice corner, but I am the worst person to ask on how to make friends because I'm so bad with people. But you know, you gotta jump in. You know, I don't know like all the details of this person's situation, but I think it's very brave to pack up and leave home and you know, start a completely new experience, you know, where you're just you're out of your comfort zone. Mm-hmm. You know, that takes guts to do that. And if you're going to do that, you need to just commit to it, and you need to realize that, you know, I know people say life is short, and it is, but life is also very long, and you have like, you're going to have so many opportunities to just start whole new phases of your life. Like, I've never really, I moved from Philadelphia to New Jersey when I was a kid, and that's like not a big jump, but you know, the person I was 10, 15 years ago, maybe even 5 years ago, is so different than the person I am today. And that's just because, you know, you're constantly changing. You're constantly evolving. Every cell in your body is constantly dying. So, you know, as nervous as you might be, as worried as you might be, it's a brave thing you're doing. And don't let that stop you in your tracks. Just keep on going. And, you know, I wish I had better advice than that. I wish I had, you know, here's how you schmooze and you meet new people, but I have no idea how to do that. I'm afraid of everyone, and that's why I never leave my house.
Yeah, I don't really leave my house that often either. And when I do, I hang out with like my friends that I was friends with in high school who still live around here. So yeah, I would just say in terms of like making new friends, maybe just try to like quote unquote find your people in terms of like finding people who have the same interests. Like if you love movies, maybe there's a movie club, or maybe there's like, you know, some sort of discussion group or something that happens. So maybe just like sort of scour the your local scene and see if there are like small communities that you can sort of insert yourself into and sort of find people that way. So I know that's not like the most helpful response, but I also agree that traveling, especially across the country to a brand new thing, is a super brave thing. And I've always found that just traveling in general opens up things in a really great way and gives you a whole new perspective. So at the very least, I think you'll you'll grow and you know, have new experiences that way. So good luck to you, Nicholas E. All right. So our final email here comes from Joey from DePere, Wisconsin. I'm probably pronouncing the city wrong. Sorry, Wisconsinites. Joey writes, my fiance and I got a dog about 3 months ago, and she is decently well-trained, but one of her big issues is sometimes she gets upset when we leave her home alone, and she'll get into and destroy things, mostly nothing too important, but still. As a guy with dog experience, Chris, what would you recommend us doing to make her not as upset when we leave? What are some things you do when you leave your dogs home alone? Thanks for any advice.
You know, our dogs have gotten better. When we first got our first dog, and I was not working from home, we left her out for a while. We left her out on her own. Like, my wife and I would go to work, and then I'd come home and she would have like been like eating books, and she like took a bite out of the wall.
Wow.
So we had a crate, and I was like, I don't want to crate her because that's cruel, because you know, I'm a wuss like that, and I like animals more than people. But you know, we're just like, all right, we have to crate her or else she's gonna fucking destroy the house. But mm-hmm. The trick was to put things in the crate that sort of smelled like us, like a pillowcase or a jacket or stuff like that. And I don't know if this honestly worked or if she just calmed down because she got used to us, but I feel like that sort of, you know, it associates like your smell even when you're not there mm-hmm. and they're home alone. And it's like, all right, and I also feel like the crate is good, even though like I said, I was like, oh, I feel bad. I have heard that dogs sometimes like crates because they like having a spot that's their own. Like, even if you have a crate and you leave it open, like, you don't lock the gate, mm-hmm. just them knowing they can go somewhere to be safe. So that would be my advice. My advice is be like, get a crate, get a big one. Don't get, you know, we had a crate that was like twice the size it should have been just because I was so afraid of leaving her alone like that. Mm-hmm. But do a crate, put something in that crate that smells like you and see what happens. And I think the dog will calm down eventually. And if not, send the dog to me. I will gladly raise your dog.
All right. That's great. So, yeah, if you guys have any other questions for Chris's advice corner or just general, you know, questions for us or future mailbag topics or feedback about any of the news stories that we talked about, you can send those to peter@slashfilm.com. Make sure to leave your name and general geographic location in case we mention your email on the air. You can find more about the news stories that we talked about on today's show at slashfilm.com and linked inside the show notes of this episode. Slashfilm Daily is published every weekday, bringing you the most exciting news from the world of movies and TV, as well as deeper dives into the great features you can find on the site. You can subscribe to the show on Apple, Google, Overcast, Spotify, all of the popular podcast apps. And don't forget also to rate and review the podcast on Apple Podcasts. That really does help us out a lot. Tell your friends. Spread the word. Thank you all so much for listening, and we will talk to you tomorrow.
Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.